You are listening to Arise, Actualize Your Spiritual Potential, Lessons from the Bhagavad Gita. Part 6, Seated in the Hearts of All.
Today's message is Seated in the Hearts of All. I want to start with this return to the beginning of the Gita and the way in which the teachings are presented. The Bhagavad Gita is a conversation. It's an allegory for our own inner relationship. It's a conversation that is taking place between God and the soul. And Krishna is playing the role of God, of the higher true self. And Arjuna is playing the role of the seeking soul, the seeking self. This seeking soul that becomes open to learn, open to spiritual realization, then engages in this conversation with God. This conversation takes place on a battlefield, on the eve of a great battle. And of course, the allegory is that this battle is the one that we all face. And the battle is the battle that we have with ourself, with our own lower drives and tendencies. It's the battle that we have with our old ways of thinking. When we want to awaken spiritually, we have to leave behind the ways that don't serve our highest good anymore. This is symbolized in the teachings in the Gita, when the warrior Arjuna is on the battlefield and he looks out and he sees he's going to have to do battle with his own family. So the family represents his own patterns of thought, his own beliefs, his tendencies. There we have the stage set on the scene in the Gita. Arjuna is on the journey of awakening. It is the journey that we're all on. And for all of us to experience transformation in life, we all have this battle to do with our own tendencies and our own thinking that no longer serves our highest good. Today, we're going to be examining chapter 13 and 14, some verses from there in the Gita that begin by giving us some instruction about the nature of this field in which the battle is taking place. I want to begin with the first verse in the 13th chapter, which says, "This body is said to be the field." So that's pretty clear, isn't it? The body is the field. In this teaching tradition, the body is not just the physical body. It includes that, but it also includes what we call the subtle body, which is the mind, and the belief system. So the personality, the mind, the physical body is all the field. So this body is said to be the field. Those who are wise in such matters say that one who knows this is a knower of the field. The second verse says, and this is the voice of the divine self speaking, "Understand that I am the knower of the field in all fields." I am the knower of the field in all fields. There's a beautiful metaphor in the teachings about how we can come to see this. Because when we look out and we see God's infinite variety in everyone, it's so easy to forget that it's just one light, one life that we're interacting with. But we see different people, and so we think, different light. The metaphor that's used is if you have a bunch of clay pots filled with water sitting out in the sun, the light of the sun will be reflected in every pot. The pots are all separate, but there is one light that is lighting them all. It's a beautiful way of thinking about how this one light of God is the life of us all. And we really are all water pots. You know, if you really understand about the body and what makes up the body, we're mostly water, and that one light of God. And that light is the knower in all the fields. So one consciousness is aware in and as and through each one of us. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that amazing to really think about how this is one life? Understand that I am the knower of the field in all fields. True knowledge is considered by me to be that knowledge of the field and of the knower of the field. In other words, one who is awake spiritually understands the field itself, where everything takes place, and spirit, that is the knower of the field. God is the knower of all the fields because God is omnipresent and all-pervading. The focus of chapter 13 and 14 is discernment. And what we are to discern is the distinction between our essential nature as supreme consciousness, that which is the knower of the field, and the field itself, the body and mind, which is made up of the qualities of nature. So, the ability to discern the qualities that permeate all of nature, the field, and their potential influence on us is the key to choosing a life of freedom in the spirit and the joy that comes with it. Here's the bottom line. Let me summarize. When we know, when we realize, and that is, don't just know intellectually, but we realize so that we act in accordance with what we know, when we know that our essential nature is spiritual, and that we are the witness to what occurs in the field, to the thoughts and tendencies that arise. We are the witness, not the tendencies. When we know that, we can be free from the compelling influences of nature, and we don't have to be bound by them, by how we feel, by thoughts that arise. Do you know that you don't have to believe your thoughts? Some people don't know that. They think if they have a thought, it must be true. When we recognize that we are the knower, then we can bring that light of knowing to discern whether or not we want to believe our thoughts. We can occupy a place of choice. When we identify ourselves with the body and mind, we are bound by the qualities of nature that affect the body and mind and the suffering that that bondage brings. I want to talk for a few minutes about what the qualities are that I'm talking about. The Gita identifies three principal qualities that pervade all of nature. They're the qualities that interact and give rise to all of creation. They're present everywhere in our minds, in our bodies, in the pew, in the carpet, in nature. Everything is made up of these three principal qualities. First quality, they're a Sanskrit word, and I will try to define them. The first quality is sattva. Guna, and guna means quality. Sattva guna is the principle of luminosity, of light, of clarity, and of peace. Then there's the principle or the quality of rajas, which is kind of like it sounds, activity, passion, anger, greed, drivenness. That's rajas guna. Then there's tamas guna, and that is the quality of inertia, of heaviness, or resistance. You ever get your heels dug in? That is tamas guna, active in your field of consciousness. When these qualities are imbalanced, they provide what is necessary and useful for us to act and to accomplish what we want to accomplish in life. Sattva brings clarity, brings light and awareness. Rajas brings the energy we need to perform action and goal orientation. And tamas, that quality, brings solidity and the stick-to-itiveness that we need to bring things to completion and to see them through. There's two primary challenges that I want to talk about this morning when we're dealing with these qualities. Two primary challenges to be aware of. The first is when we're not aware of the qualities and their power, we give them power over us and we let them run the show. I just gave the example of when we get our heels dug in. We all know that expression, right? And we know what it feels like to be dug in on something. If we don't identify that that is a quality in nature that is now running, it can run off with us. It can determine what we're going to say, the stand that we're going to take, and be unmoving. It can cloud our wisdom. So you see, when we're not aware of the qualities and what they give rise to, we fall prey to them running the show. So that's the first challenge that we have to be aware of with these qualities in nature. Second is that when they are consistently out of balance and one predominates above the others, that one quality begins to shape our bodies, begins to shape our thinking, our minds, our personality, and ultimately our character. You know, somebody say, oh, so-and-so is an angry person, right? You've heard that expression. Or so-and-so is a happy person. It's the quality of nature that has become habituated in that person's body and mind, the way they think, and the reaction that they're going to have, whatever comes. What might these three different tendencies look like if they were allowed to predominate in our life and in our experience? Let's name them and take a look at them. Tamas guna is this energy of inertia. If we were to personify tamas guna and be able to identify it when it is way out of balance so much so that it's taken over, tamas guna is our experience of what we call couch potato. You know tamas guna is predominating in your field of body-mind if you are on the couch with the remote, with kind of a glazed look. You don't really even have the energy or the light of consciousness to be paying attention to what's on the screen. It doesn't really matter. It's just this. And it is the only exercise that you're willing to do, except for maybe getting up and going to the freezer and getting the pint of Häagen-Dazs to go with the chips. So that is what this quality of tamas guna, of inertia, looks like when it's in the driving seat. If you don't recognize it, then it will be running you instead of the other way around. You're beginning to catch on to the value of being able to identify. What does rajas guna look like? Rajas guna, run wild, looks like the man or the woman in the fast lane on 880, going 80, text messaging with this hand on the steering wheel and this one with the Starbucks latte. Going down. That is rajas guna, run wild. There is a drivenness, a driven quality about rajas guna. Sattva guna looks like someone who is inclined to meditation, to eat all their vegetables in balance. The right food combining comes naturally to the sattvic tendency. We say, well, you know, that's pretty good, right, to have that one in predominance, and actually that is a goal. But the teachings also say you can get stuck at the sattva outpost too, which is attachment to happiness and has a certain tinge of righteousness to it, so that somebody is way over in sattva, they don't want anything to do with somebody who once had a cigarette 3 years ago. All of the qualities we want to be aware of so that we can make the discernment about the energies that are arising. These energies are seeds, and they all bear fruit. We find in the 14th chapter of the Gita then the teaching about what the fruit of each of those qualities is. This verse 16 says, any work, when it is well done, bears the pure harmony of sattva, this principle of luminosity. But when done in rajas, it brings pain and suffering. You see, this is so helpful for us to know, because I believe that we live in the valley of rajas. In Silicon Valley, we live in the valley of rajas guna. It's helpful for us to understand this, because the compelling urge where we are is to go faster and faster to meet our goal. And this says that if you do it in that way, the end result is actually going to be suffering. So we think that just pushing and driving harder and faster is going to get us success. And it may, but the cost may be more than what we bargained for. This is what this is telling us about letting that quality be in the driver's seat. Rajas brings pain and suffering, and when something is done in the spirit of tamas guna, it increases ignorance. From sattva arises wisdom, from rajas greed, and from tamas comes negligence, delusion, and ignorance. So the key is that this predominating influence that is expressing in our field, that is the body-mind, can influence our experience in the present moment, but perhaps even more important than that, it also can determine our future. Not only our individual future, but our collective future, as a community and in the world. The choices that we make regarding our relationship to these qualities in nature are the seeds of our own future experience. So let's take a look at the scripture this morning that's in your study lesson on the second page inside, and let's read through it together. This is from chapter 13 and chapter 14. Spirit is undivided, yet appears to be divided. The sustainer of all beings and that which dissolves and produces them anew. It is the light of lights that is beyond darkness. The knowledge, the object of knowledge, and that which is to be realized by knowledge. It is seated in the hearts of all. The spirit of man, when in nature, feels the ever-changing conditions of nature. When he binds himself to things ever-changing, fate whirls him round through life. But the Supreme Spirit in humanity is beyond any fate. It watches, gives blessing, bears all, feels all. It is called the Supreme Lord and the Oversoul. One who knows spirit in truth and discerns nature with its changing conditions, wherever that person may be, he or she is no longer impelled by fate. Sattva, rajas, tamas, luminosity, passion, and inertia are the three qualities of nature. They appear to limit in finite bodies the absolute freedom of their essential spiritual nature. When a person with vision sees the qualities of nature as the agents of action and knows that which is beyond them, that one attains my being. In the Yoga Sutra, the second chapter, we find the verse that says, pain and suffering. This is chapter 2, verse 16. Pain and suffering, which has not yet been experienced, is to be avoided. Pain and suffering, which has not yet been experienced, is to be avoided. And then 17 says, suffering is due to the soul's excessive identification with the mind and the body. The good news about this verse, you know, you hear it and you think, well, of course I want to avoid that. But this tells us it's possible to avoid it, that we don't live as victims in a universe that's out to get us randomly, that we have the ability to awaken and to cooperate with the power for good that's running the universe. We have the ability to wake up and to plant good seeds that will bear good fruit in our life. There's a story about a man who called himself a farmer. And when his friend asked him how much land he cultivated, he said, oh, I have about 5 feet, 10 inches of land. And his friend said, well, that's not very much. How much could you possibly grow in a space like that? And he said, the field that I have is a very special field. This body and this mind that I occupy is the field. And my thoughts, my speech, and my actions are the seeds that I plant. And what I harvest is my karma, the results of what I have planted. This teaching we find in all spiritual traditions. The sayings of the Buddha recorded in the Dhammapada begins, all that we are arises with our thoughts. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. And we find in Christianity, Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a person sows, so will they reap. The thoughts that we think are the seeds that we plant in the field of the body and mind, and each bears fruit according to its kind. We really only have to take a moment to reflect on what we already know about this. So we can just think about our different experience that we have. If we find ourselves being overtaken by the quality of Rajas Guna, for example, and we find a propensity towards resentment and anger, that is our response towards what is coming towards us in life, it won't be too long before we find that we have a headache or indigestion. And then if we get a headache or indigestion, we will be resentful or angry that we got a headache or indigestion. Just compare that to if you have the quality of sattva guna pervading and your natural response is one of patience and compassion. Just your whole tummy relaxes and your heart opens and you find that you're naturally inclined toward loving kindness and compassion. We are the farmers, tilling the soil of our minds, choosing good seed to bring forth the crop that we desire. We do this during our time of contemplation and prayer. We consciously choose the higher way for ourselves. We make an intention. That's one of our spiritual practices. We intend to plant good seeds. Then there is the arena of the battlefield where it's taking place, all the action that's taking place in our minds and our bodies when we're out in the world and interacting with others. And these are really the critical moments when we have the opportunity to respond to whatever life is bringing us. That is where we want to bring forth this light of knowing that we are the knower of the field and that we can choose what our response is, not allow ourselves to be diverted from our goal of abiding in the self or losing it, as we might say. When I was in the Midwest, I heard an expression that I didn't really know. A woman said, I was so upset, I lost my religion. I heard the song years ago, but I didn't know, and it's evidently a common expression in the South and in the Midwest. I thought it was a fabulous way of saying I got caught up in the gunas and lost track of my essential nature. I want to conclude here by saying it is our highest goal to remain spiritually awake and to cooperate with the divine self. Let's close with our affirmation now. You'll find it on the back of your study lesson. When we affirm, we're planting seeds in the soil of our minds. And we're not looking at outer conditions, but we are tilling the inner soil to produce new crops. I'm going to say it, and then you say it with me with feeling. I am the conscious witness of my thoughts and actions. Together, I am the conscious witness of my thoughts and actions. I remain inwardly serene and unmoved by changing conditions. I remain inwardly serene and unmoved by changing conditions. I am free from the compelling influences of nature. I am free from the compelling influences of nature. I see clearly the path of right action before me, and I freely choose it. I see clearly the path of right action before me, and I freely choose it. I am serenely patient and know all good is mine to accept. Okay, let's have a breath before you say, I am serenely patient, okay? Let's breathe in, out. I am serenely patient and know all good is mine to accept.
The Center for Spiritual Enlightenment is a ministry in the spiritual tradition of Kriya Yoga that offers a time-tested method for self and God realization for people from all religious backgrounds. The CSE ministry is dedicated to spiritual awakening by fostering the presence of peace in our community, in the world, and in the hearts of individuals. For more information about CSE or to inquire about Reverend O'Brien's speaking schedule or publications, visit our website at www.csecenter.org or call 408-283-0221 or write to the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, 1146 University Avenue, San Jose, California, 95126. Gratitude to Chi Chen for music from her CD, One Cello, One World, courtesy of Urban Chi Music.